the Hollywood Bound Actor Podcast. The number one place to be if you're an actor who wants to book starring roles in film and television. And now your host, the booking magnet, Christine Horn.
I gotta sing for everybody. Yes.
Don't know if I'm going in the right direction.
You are here.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me here. I'm happy to be here. I've been excited all week to talk to you.
Oh, yay. Because of pandemic life and things, we don't see each other and we don't go into in-person auditions anymore like that. No. So we used to see each other quite often in LA.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, on these Instagram, Facebook streets.
Exactly. Right. That's the current events.
Right.
What do you mean you're not on Instagram? I need to see what you're doing.
How am I supposed to?
I'm supposed to know. You had three. You had a kid.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy to see you. Y'all, if you have missed any part of the Booking Magnet Magic series, make sure you catch up. Today, we're talking to Tawana. And I got to know Tawana just by being in LA and truly the circle of Black actresses, you know, who have good energy. I'm gonna say that, who have good energy, small, and you just start to attract each other. Mm-hmm. And you recognize her, I'm sure, from all the things. She's always on your TV in some way. So how did all this start? I mean, we share a New York connection.
Yes, Bronx girls who migrated out, who was part of the Great Exodus when the buildings were burning down.
Tell me about that. What was that like growing up in New York for you? And how did that how did you start into the world of acting and being a creative?
Yeah, I was born and raised in, I was born in the South Bronx. And so I think the best depiction of what the South Bronx looked like at that time is The Get Down on Netflix. I think Baz Luhrmann did a great job at showing us what that looked like. And so I'd say maybe around 77, there was this exodus of the people who could afford to move their families out, started moving out of the South Bronx and started migrating north. I know some friends who moved to the North Bronx. We moved to Yonkers, which I've recently found out that the Bronx is Yonkers. It was just some dude named Bronk bought up that section and called it the Bronx. But
very interesting. My grandma lives not too far from Yonkers still, 230.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yep, that's exactly where I was living last before I moved to LA. And so I was right at the height of hip hop starting. So really hip hop raised me. That is, I don't think there's anything that can show what a phoenix rising is than watching something being birthed out of burnt down buildings and bricks and rubble or whatever to come full circle to be where it is today when everybody denounced it. Everybody said, this is not going far. We hate this, you know, whatever. But these Black and brown kids created this thing and now it drives the culture of everything. So for me to witness that and also be a part of it, because when you're during that time, everybody had to choose like a hip hop discipline. You had to either be a B-girl or you had to be an MC or a DJ or a graffiti artist. Well, I was like 7. So I had to be.
I gotta choose right now.
I can't do graffiti. I'm really not good with rhyming. Maybe if I put my head to it, I'm a little lazy. So I just started dancing. And I think what really was the impetus is because I was watching these shows and these young kids, Beat Street and all that stuff, but also being the one kid at the parties with all my cousins, I was the best dancer. And so I was also very shy. So my family would pay me to dance. So once I learned that I could earn a couple of dollars, well, actually like 50 cents, $5 was like a big come up, right?
Sure.
But yeah, so that's really how I started. And then, you know, we moved a lot, but I did go to a performing arts high school in Yonkers for dance because, and I'm such a late bloomer. I just, God got me because everything is really like happenstance, but really is divinely ordered. In junior high school, I did not know that we had to choose a high school. I was just used to just being told what to do. Mm-hmm. And my friends were like, oh, what high school are you going to go to? And I was like, I don't know. Where do we go next? And he's like, no, Twani, you got to choose. And I was like, what? So there was like a trade school. There was a computer school. And then there was a performing arts school. And I found out, grace of God.
I didn't know there was a performing arts school in Yonkers.
It happened in 84, I believe, 83 or 84. And what they did was they started integrating the schools. So I went to a school that I was bussed into the white neighborhood in the 80s. Like civil rights all over again.
Gotcha.
So I chose the performing arts school because I watched Fame as a kid, you know. Mm-hmm. Fame has birthed a lot of little creatives from that age range to teach us to make us want to dance or sing or whatever the case, play music, instruments, whatever. So that was like really the fortifying moment for me of recognizing dance was really a part of what I do. We moved to New Jersey during my junior year of high school, which was like at first it was horrible, but then of course I made friends. And then my parents moved back a year before I graduated high school. And I'm like, I called my best friend. I was like, where did y'all go for your senior trip? And she said, oh, we going on a dude ranch. And I was like, oh yeah, we're going to the Bahamas. So I'm going to have to find somebody to stay. A dude ranch? No, we're going to the Bahamas. So I wound up staying with a friend, and then at the end of high school, moved back to the Bronx because that's where my parents were at that point. So my one friend, Cheryl Sidnor, shout out to her if she's ever watching this, we went to that performing arts high school together. And at that time she was working for Def Jam, Def Media. They had an advertising marketing company at that time. And she worked for them and she was like, hey, they got this audition. LL Cool J is trying to make his comeback and we should go down there. And I'm like, all right. I mean, I had no dreams. I really didn't know what was next, right? I don't know. I was just like a kid on the block, just like hanging out. I really had no vision. And so we go to this audition. Now, me being the dancer that we were when we were in school, we would change into leotards and perform so that you can move. So I get to the school, I get to the audition, I go in the bathroom. I skipped down. I come out I went and got an outfit because you know you always got to be fly in New York.
Of course.
I went and got some orange little biker shorts and a little crop top and whatever. And I came out of the bathroom. My two friends are looking at me like, come out and tell us. And I was like, we all went to the same school. I didn't know I needed to tell you. I just assumed that we're on the same wavelength. I'm just having this, this realization now that, oh my goodness, we're not all on the same wavelength. Wow. Anyway, so do the audition. There's a mad girls there. I don't know what competition is. I'm just in there having fun and doing my thing. I think I'm a bad bitch because that's how we are in New York, right? New York, we braggadocious. Like I'm dope too. So I do the audition. It got down to maybe like 20 girls in the room. And then they was like, we don't know how to eliminate. If you could do a split, just do a split. So you just heard boom, 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 boom around the room. I was one of them. And so I wound up being in the LL Cool J's Around the Way Girl. That was my first.
Yeah, I got to go back and watch. I got to go back and watch.
It was interesting because I didn't know what to do. There's one point where LL, they're filming. I don't know the camera is. He puts his arm around me. He brings me to the front. I trip over his feet. It's like... Thank goodness there is an actual photo that I think was in Word Up magazine that I could be like, I really was there. But what that did was that led to, there was this woman, Meredith, I can't remember her last name. And she was always like a scouting out little young kids or club kids to go and do other music videos. And so that's how I would do music videos around town. Now, I want to say all the connective people were in Brooklyn and I was way in the Bronx. So I didn't have that network. I didn't know that you had to do that back then. And Meredith would always, when she see me, she'd be like, oh, can you give me a headshot? When you get a chance, get a headshot. And I'm like, what is that? What is that? And I'm like, well, she keep calling me, so I don't need a headshot. And then she stopped calling.
I didn't get a headshot.
I didn't know. Right. And then I finally started to work that out. So that was my journey into entertainment was through being a B-girl, choreographing and dancing, choreographed dance routines and music videos. And then later, of course, by happenstance, somebody in Yonkers is like, hey, you know, my friend, he's coming up. He needs some dancers. Can you choreograph? I'm like, yeah, sure. And it was DMX. Now, DMX, they never need no dancers. Okay. But you know,
he was not known for his dancers.
He never needed dancers. He even said, he's like, y'all know I don't need dancers, right? And we're like, yeah, we know. He said, but I like y'all. His then manager was trying to make him MC Hammer. It was a whole thing. But yeah, right. So that was it. And I'll tell you the defining moment of when I had to stop dancing was when I saw Michael Jackson's Remember the Time, and there was nothing but New York dancers in that video. And I sat there and I cried, like, how come I wasn't there? How come I didn't know about it? Whatever. So that defining moment was not only just me pulling out of dance, but later on, in retrospect, I realized the importance of networking. I didn't know how to do that then. So then I was like, I don't want to dance anyway. And there's a ceiling. So what else can I do? So I started to transition into acting. Because when I was in seventh grade, my choir teacher put me in Pippin because I had a lot of energy and I got on her nerves. So she wanted me to be in this so I could dispel that energy. And I loved it. So I remember that. And I said, well, I'm going to learn how to do that. And just kind of like found my way around New York, trying to find classes to learn how to act. And here's the arrogant part of me, because when I went to that Performing Arts High School in Yonkers, each department would talk about dance is the hardest discipline. It's harder than learning an instrument. It's harder than acting. And then the acting teacher's like, acting's the hardest. It's harder than dancing, and so on and so forth. So I came into acting with this arrogance. I'm like, oh, it's acting. It's easy. I'm a dancer. And then I had this audition for Men in Black. I think it was Men in Black 2. First of all, how did I get that audition? Second of all, I was so bad that at one point the casting director looked over her glasses like,
not that. That was a who let you in here moment.
That's exactly what that was. And in that moment, I said, I think I need to take classes.
This isn't transit.
No, but it's discipline. I have discipline. I can hit a mark.
They're like, it's a different discipline.
Oh, beats. I know beats. No, not okay. Yeah. So that was my trajectory into becoming an actor. And then I was at the School for Film and Television, which is, I believe now it's gone, but it was in New York, and I was learning commercials because I've always loved commercials. And then I also found out, you know, how much money people made. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. Yeah. And I was taking this class. Of course, I was horrible. And there was this one guy who was really good. And I spoke to him afterwards and, you know, was trying to understand his journey. And he was like a political science master's degree or whatever. He's like, but I always wanted to act. And he said, he looked in backstage. For those who don't know, backstage is this periodical.
It used to be a paper that we got.
It's a paper every, I think, Wednesday. That's right. It's an app now. It's online now, but it still has.
Get that paper from the newsstand. Scout, where am I?
Focused. Yes.
Make your plan.
Get your little 8x10s and your envelopes. Open calls. So he had found this Meisner teacher, and he's like, "Yeah, I've been going to her, and it's been made all the difference." So I found her, and I went to her, and I was there for 2+ years learning Meisner. In that studio with that woman. And that was, she was a lot. She was very demanding, but her need for the truth is what she instilled in all of the actors. Mm-hmm. So that was really where I learned how to act. That's where I became great, but still had this inadequate cloud over me. It's like, oh, but I didn't go to Yale. Oh, but I didn't go blah, 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 blah. I just did this because in New York City,
by the Juilliards and the Yale.
You are surrounded by it. And there's this snobbery that really, that's the best and everything else is subpar. So for many, many years, I had, and it still comes up, where it's just like, oh, I didn't go to, oh, I didn't do that. I should have. And at one point I considered going to Yale, and I was fortunate because that acting teacher had a really good friend who was, what was she? She was a career coach, but they both went to university together and to train as actors. And so she brought her in to work with us. And that woman had seen me act, and I was telling her how I was feeling, and I was going to go to, you know, to Yale. And she said, I think you are really being hard on yourself. I've seen you act. If you go to Yale, it's going to cost you this money. It's going to do all these things. You already have the foundation. Now just go to Yale, go to their website, look at the classes that they offer, and make your own curriculum. And it'll save you much more money. And plus, you get to choose the teachers that you want to work with, as opposed to being beholden to working with these people that who knows what could be going on. And so that's what I did. And so everybody who knows me well knows I'm, it was great advice. I'm constantly training. I'm constantly elevating my skills and looking for ways to, at first, for many years, I would call it how to be a better actor. But recently during the pandemic, I realized what I've been learning is how to be a better storyteller. How do I break down the story? And so it's just like this evolution, because we're always growing in our artistry. That's how I got here.
I love it. But so how did it get you to LA? Because now you're taking your, you made your own curriculum, you're taking your classes, you're doing some good, some bad auditions. Yeah. How did LA happen?
So LA happened, I met this guy at Nell's. He was a bouncer at Nell's. So Nell's was like the hot spot in New York City. It was this kind of like this lounge, but also it had a dance floor underneath. It had special nights for certain types of music. It was the place where if you were a club kid and you liked to dance, that's the place where we would go. And so I met this guy there, and it's like I walked up, and he was so gorgeous. Like I was like, he looked like a skinny Luther Vandross. Like he is fine. But I've always been really shy. And so my friend let him know that I was interested in him. I went in, I'm dancing, whatever. I come out, my hair stuck to my face or whatever. And he's like, oh, so I hear that you think I'm cute. And I'm just like looking like a little preacher that came from out the sewer. So we had started to date. And he told me on the first night that his plan was to go to law school. He had always wanted to go to law school. And if we were going to get serious, that he wanted me to know that at some point he's either going to go to Michigan or California to study law. And I, ambition? Yes, I'm here for it. So we dated for, I think, 3 years. And then he finally went to Thomas Kalee Law School in Michigan. And while he was gone, I think he was there for 3 years. So that year when he was about to come back, I realized, damn, he went and followed his dream. What are you going to do? Now he's going to come back. What, are you going to get married, have kids? Whoa, I'm not ready to do that yet. I'm still like young. So it was like all this panic that was happening. And so we did, we moved in together. And I think we moved in for like maybe a year or maybe 8 months. Yeah, it was like seven or 8 months. And we realized this is not going to work. And so it was kind of perfect. God ordered, divinely ordered. I have this friend who was from Co-op City in the Bronx, and she had been here in LA for 10 years. And she was always like, you need to move out here. I need friends out here. You need to move out here. And I'm like, girl, I ain't coming to LA. I'm going to do in LA. And so finally I was like, I think I'm going to go to LA. So I just hashed out this plan because I had this career coach and I had my 3 month plan, my 1 year plan planned out, then my 3 month and all this other stuff. And then one day I was talking to her and she said, you just need to come to LA. And I said, okay. And she got quiet. She's like, stop playing. Swanee, you always playing. I was like, no, I'm going to come. You know, we broke up. I moved out. I didn't follow my dream. And now is the time. I'm trained. I'm ready. And so that was a transition. But there was like, I call it a trifecta. I don't know if you call it that. I don't know if I call it a trifecta, but a trinity of events. Because first, what happened first? First, I had to put my cat down. This is when I'm living with this guy. My cat, I love my cat. She got really sick, so I had to put her down. So that's one responsibility that's gone. Mm-hmm. Then I was working at Bergdorf Goodman, making ridiculous money. And I had planned to leave because I was already starting to audition and book non-union commercials in New York. So I had planned to leave because it was getting really hard for me to make those auditions on my lunch break, all the stress that, you know what I'm talking about. So I had paid off all my debt and then I was putting like several hundred dollars away a week. And then I was like, oh, I'm banking mad money. I ain't quitting. And then I got fired.
Woo! Come on. Come on and help me out. When you start teetering, like, oh, let me help you.
No, God said, we had a plan. Now, you think this little money? No. You fired. You
ain't seen nothing yet, boo.
You fired. And I remember being in the HR office doing my final whatever. There was two things that happened that day. And I'm talking to the HR woman and she's giving me all the paperwork or whatever. And I'm just listening. And she gets quiet and she stares at me and she's like, are you okay? And I said, yeah, why? She said, usually when people get fired, they're usually really upset and crying. And so I'm concerned that you're going to hurt yourself. I said, oh, can I collect unemployment?
Right.
She said, yeah. I said, no, I'm fine. I'm good. This was long coming. And she's like, oh, okay. And as I'm walking back I'm walking to the subway and I'm with the manager who had walked me over to HR. And she was like the junior manager. She was annoying. And she's like, oh, so what are you going to do now? Like, you know, you're going to go to like Saks or something? And I said, no, I'm going to pursue my acting. She's like, good luck with that. And walked off. And I was like, wow. Mm. She don't even know. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, sometimes that little battery in your back of, I don't believe you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was the second thing. And then me and him, we broke up. So I was like, that's three things that was holding me here.
Major things.
Major events. And so now I'm free to go and move. And so I'm, after he and I broke up, I moved into an apartment in Jersey City. He was from Jersey City. So we lived there because one, it was cheaper to the lifestyle, but also it was much faster, the commute to New York, than it was when I was in the North Bronx. And so I moved into a tiny little apartment. And what was so interesting, although I was so close to my family in New York, I was still so far because I didn't have a car. And so I was in that tiny little apartment for a year, which became my sanctuary in this isolation and dealing with the despair and the breakup and all this other stuff. And so it was really helpful for me to have that time. Because when I moved here to LA, I didn't feel the loneliness that people feel when they make that transition from their family or whatever. I had already experienced that. Yeah. Divine order. Nothing but divine order. And so, yeah, I came up with a plan. I was working at an optical shop on weekends and booking my little non-union commercials. And it was perfect. And my friend, she was like, well, you know, you come to LA, you're going to have to get a job. And I was like, no, I'm not. Maybe at first for a couple of months, but I'm not going to be on no job anymore. Because once I got free, once Bergdorf Goodman terminated me, it was the first day of spring. And I went and I sat in Washington Square Park and I had my Essence magazine and I heard the birds chirping. And it was as if God just turned the volume up on nature because I wasn't hearing them before, right? And so it was just a moment where I just looked up and had this realization and just saw the beauty, like my scope opened up. Yeah. I heard the birds chirping. I'm sitting in the park. The first day of spring in New York is a major thing because we've been dealing with winter months, you know, for so long. So that first day is like, it's like the Wiz when they take off the, they take off that heavy thing. And I had this realization of I'm free. And then I went to the subway one morning and I'm just watching the rat race. And I'm just watching people go get into work, hurried, head down, just not paying attention. And I was like, that was me. I was just trying to get to my destination, but not taking anything in. And so once I had that freedom and then moving here, and LA is free. LA is about the consciousness here. Is about work hard, play harder. Mm-hmm. So it was a perfect fit for me to transition from that into here, LA. And it wasn't easy because culture shock and all these other elements just trying to survive. you know, have a job and everything. All of that stuff comes into play. But it's here is where I would say I found myself. That apartment in Jersey City was the beginning of that. But then coming to LA is where I cultivated who Tawana really is. And like when I go home, people don't recognize me. You know, it's like, you're different. Why you drive so slow? I ain't got nowhere to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Ease and flow.
Yeah. Honk the horn. Relax. Don't touch my horn.
And we should evolve, you know, as human beings.
Yes.
As we grow and as we go through stuff. And
yeah.
You know, I should not be the same.
Yeah. I didn't have that language then. I was just like, oh, I don't know. Oh, am I changing? Because, you know, people fault you when you start to change.
Oh, and absolutely.
And so it wasn't until probably the last 8 years where now it's in the atmosphere, where now we're hearing celebrities and magnates of businesses talk about, you can't stay the same if you're wanting to evolve. And so now I'm like, oh, okay, it's okay that I change. Okay, good.
Yeah. I love that. What a journey. And the part of this whole story that I'm locked into at this moment is I'm seeing you in the Jersey City apartment alone.
Yeah.
Processing all the things. It was almost like that preparation before you came here, because like you said, it is a culture shock. It is an adjustment. So getting to know yourself a lot more, being in your own space, mm-hmm. I'm sure proved very helpful when you came out here and learning a new part of you, exploring everything. Everything is new, including
everything.
You.
There were two people that are here now that were part of my transition in New York. And one is Crystal Lee Brown. We were doing this play in Harlem. Oh gosh. I don't even want to talk about that experience, but that's how we met. Okay. And immediately our spirits connected.
For those of you watching and listening, Crystal Lee Brown is also part of this Booking Magnet Magic series. So if you missed her interview, make sure you catch it.
Yes, check out Crystal Lee Brown. And she was just like this little sister. But when we found out we were moving to LA, that's when we really was like, oh, we need to stay in touch. And so, and I don't know if you know Anthony Bertram. Do you know Anthony Bertram?
Yes, I actually do. Yeah, I've met him through the Cool People Pod.
Yes. Now he probably does not know this. But when I met him at the School for Film and Television, and we've remained friends ever since then. But when I was having that breakup, and when I moved into that apartment, and me and him were broke back mountain, man, he was living in Queens. He's from Queens. And he called me. He's like, hey, how's the move going? And I was like, it's done. I just got my bed on the floor and now I'm here. And he must have heard something in my voice. And he said, well, I don't really have money for the toll, but if you want to split the toll with me, I'll come over. And I said, yeah, yeah. I think the toll was like $7. Like that's how tight it was. I was like, yeah, I got $350, you know, whatever. Not only did he come over, but he bought chicken wings and French fries. And anybody from New York who knows chicken wings and French fries, that is an act of endearment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
For us to split. And he had like a $3 bottle of wine. And we sat on my floor. I'm getting close to think about it. We sat on that floor.
And look at y'all now.
I know. That's still my homie. Both of those people are still my homies.
Anthony's dad made some banging food.
Let me tell you something. I got a crush on Pops. I have this running joke with him. I was like, your dad's still married? I'm kidding.
It was one Thanksgiving we shared. I think we were at our friend Keenan's house. And I was like, that food was so good. I was like,
yeah.
Back to New York.
Exactly.
I love that though. That's the, you know, for those of you watching and listening, the power of community and friendship. Like, it's not about having a huge circle. It's about who's in that quality over the quantity.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. And all the people we're mentioning are consistently working actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I love hearing this story. This is a new story to me too. So I'm like, tell me more. What happened?
Oh gosh. Yes.
I love it. I want to transition to the things that sparked you. I hear how hip hop inspired you, and if you meet Tawana like in person. She just, that's the vibe you're gonna get. You're gonna you ooze the hip hop.
I didn't know.
Which always makes you feel like home too.
Yeah.
But when were you watching, when you were younger and you would watch TV shows or movies, like what kind of people drew you in? Like who were the performers that made you lean in and like really pay attention?
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about 70s, 80s, right? And so we weren't heavily, meaning Black folks, Black people, we weren't heavily represented in television, but for those few episodes or shows that we did have, of course, we had the Jeffersons, Marla Gibbs is like my spirit animal. Wheezy, Jefferson, Sherman Hemsley, you know, Roxy Roker. Of course, there was good times, but I was really more because I like luxury. I don't know where that came from. Maybe my mother, she's a Libra. She likes beautiful things, but I've always liked luxurious things. Even if I'm on a budget, I'm going to find something luxurious to splurge or indulge in. So it was really the Jeffersons. But when I think of like the sophisticated ladies, that Lola Falana.
Yes.
Woo! She was up there with those lashes. And just beautiful in these outfits. So Lola Falana for sure. Flip Wilson. I didn't realize this until recently, but that's really the core of where, like when people's like, oh, who's your comedy favorite? And they name all these white dudes and white women or whatever. And yeah, that, you know, we give them accolades, but for me it was Flip Wilson. And then come to find out later, he owned his entire show. So. Wow. How powerful was he at that time, and being able to bring Richard Pryor onto the scene in this way that would help to elevate his star. So Flip Wilson playing Gertrude and having all those Black people, you know, doing these skits because we're funny. We're very funny people without a script. I named my best friend when she started doing comedy and she needed a stage name. I said, you should call yourself Kizzy. And she was like, Kizzy, like the slave? And I said, yeah, she was strong. She was like the person who was like the liaison of making sure everybody was okay. And so Leslie Uggams, love me some Leslie Uggams. And oh my God, there's so many women. Oh, I'm trying to think of the woman who, Madge Sinclair, who used to be on, I think it was Trapper John MD. You know, I'm
And as you're watching them, but what, as you, outside of the representation and their, and I'm sure they're amazing, like you talk about their presence on the screen and their power, was it like everybody has a sparkle or something? Like what did it feel like to you?
When they were regal.
Which goes with the luxuriousness that you enjoy.
They would present. You know, you think of James Earl Jones, they come on the screen or they walk into a room and they command attention, not in a way that's egoic, that's saying, look at me. It's just like, I belong here. Yeah. I'm taking up space and I have something to say and I'm going to say it. And so it's just something that I've always been attracted to, power and reverence. And anything that just feels like majestic. So those things will always draw me in. Like, you know, Felicia Rashad, I have a headshot where I'm trying to look like her in the 90s, you know, this poise, this elegance, Cicely Tyson. Oh, so.
And when you said Madge Sinclair, I was recently going back and looking at some of her older stuff recently. For some reason, I've been doing that a lot in the past 2 years, especially since I've gone deeper into coaching. And I watched so much stuff like you when I was younger, but I'm like, I want to go back now with this more informed actor brain of mine. I want to see what they was really doing. I was just enjoying it to enjoy it. But now I'm watching, I'm like, oh, that was juicy. Oh, and I'm like taking notes. Like that is my acting class these days.
That is the acting class. Oh, Ruby Dee. This woman is just everything is unexpected. Where is she living? You know, when she did that clap in the, sorry if that hurt my mic, but when she did that clap in, what was it? Not Do the Right Thing. It was
Jungle Fever.
Yeah, with Jungle Fever. With Sam Jackson. Mm-hmm. When she was calling in his spirit in that kitchen, I'm getting chills every time I see that. Whew, that, and then I watched something with her and Sidney Poitier many, many years ago. And I was like, oh, so she was always doing this.
Yeah. You're going to make me have a Ruby Dee playlist. That's what I need.
I think she's a Sagittarius too. You might want to look her up.
Is she?
She might be.
Let me see.
I got to look at people's astrology. I'm like, what's this sign? I'm feeling like a Leo, over, you know, but yes, this woman, that woman, whoo, when she stare at you, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to make me make, I need a fresh playlist. I get so inspired. Just.
Yeah, same.
And I think about how the industry is now and the opportunities we have now and the access we have now. And then I think about, man, these women, and I'm just leaning toward the women, these Black women at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the barriers they had to break through to even to be able to, for us to be able to even talk about them now, how important that was and how important it is now, the work we're doing.
Yeah.
And it just, man, and I love just watching how the weight of that time was on them in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're living through a different time in this moment. We're going through different things. And that's some of the weight we bring to our performances based in our life and history. So just,
If I can add one more, because we're talking about mostly women, but he poked his head through as I was thinking about it and I almost forgot to mention him. My grandmother loved the Rat Pack. And so, you know, she loved some Dean Martin. I love Dean Martin too, but that Sammy Davis Jr.
Mm-hmm.
was boundless in his creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I would watch him. I didn't have the language at that time, but I knew I was trying to figure out how is he able to be in this white world? It seems like it's seamless. Right. I know it wasn't, but I was wondering how is he able? And, you know, recently I went back and I started watching things and I'm like, they were always clowning him. There was always like some little, very subtle, mm-hmm. insidious jabs on his Blackness. And, you know, he knew how to just laugh it off and keep it moving. But yeah, that's another phenomenal talent who came out of nothing.
Yeah. Ooh,
and made himself the person that he is today. Or that's not so he's true. Deceased, but yeah.
When you think about that, and I'm gonna switch gears a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about as you watched all those people we mentioned and what drew you to them, they all had something magnetic that drew you in, something that was magical. Mm-hmm. What does Tawana know for sure mm-hmm. makes her magnetic? No one has to tell you.
Yeah, my authenticity.
Mm.
I have a God-given gift to see subtext. And I'm not just talking about in a script. I'm talking about when I'm with people. Mm-hmm. It's a curse and it's a gift because once I see, just the other day, my friend, she divorced at the top of the pandemic. And so now she's back on the dating scene and it's a riot. And so she's, you know, practicing dating. And she's going back and forth on a lot of dating apps. And so this one, so I'm driving and she's telling me about this one guy she had a date with, blah, blah, whatever. She shows me, I was like, oh yeah, he looks kind of whatever. I was like, oh, I like the fact that he just wanted to meet you outside and just have coffee as opposed to like go to a bar at night, but you know, whatever. And then she pulls up this other guy. She's like, oh, this guy just liked me. And she shows me the picture and I said, no. And then I went back to driving and she was like, what? I was like, no, his energy is dark. And she's like, how can you tell that? I was like, I can't explain it to you.
Yeah.
And I've been this person for a very long time because one of my other friends from New York, every time she always had new friends. And every time I was like, that's not your friend, this person, whatever. And then I would remove myself and she'd go, you know, hang out with those people. And then they would, you know, betray her at some time. And she would always say, how do you know that? And I said, you know what? It's almost as if I see their eyes turn black. It's almost like when you're watching a movie and their eyes complete. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
So I have this God-given gift that I'm really tapping into and allowing more so now in my, as I'm getting older and my becoming more wise and not afraid of it. That is the one thing that is a gift that I believe, and it could also be, looks like my mic is hot. It could also be being from New York and having to be safe.
Yeah.
So having to read
people quickly
mm-hmm. to know, should we continue? Should we get on this train? Should we walk by that person? I think that there's that. And also I want everybody to win in whatever it is they want to do. And so when you're in my end, when you're in my space, or if I'm around you, I'm encouraging you.
Yeah.
And I realize that I can be, that my encouragement can sometimes, maybe probably most times for people who are not ready to step into their greatness, can come off as critique or judgment.
Mm.
And now I recognize, oh, they're shutting down.
Yeah.
They didn't ask you, Tawana. They didn't ask you for your
opinion. That's a whole word from Christine. That's a whole word. I'm still in process.
I'm still in progress.
Because you see, because I see, I'm like,
you see it.
You know,
all you got to do is boom, boom, boom. I can help you. Come on, it's easy. It seems hard to you, but I know how to do it.
I want to ask you what time it was, though. I asked you what time.
No, but you can make a watch. Is what I'm saying. Because I saw all the things that you have in your house. You actually been making a watch. You can have your own line. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
yeah.
it.
Yes.
And I love that you're, it's that allowing it to come through and allow yourself to use that gift. Cause I know it can be scary in the beginning. I can relate to that.
Stepping into it was hard.
Yeah.
And dimming my light and just pushing other people forward. And now that I'm no longer dimming my light, and now that I'm stepping into it, the behaviors of those who I've known for many, many years, I've had my longest relationship, my longest friendship just crumbled, where it's just like, for many years, when I moved here to LA in 2005, we weren't talking then, because I was changing, because I was in that apartment. I didn't know that then, but I was in that apartment. I was evolving. Mm-hmm. Something new was being birthed. And so something happened in that time where we weren't speaking. So when I had my going away party, she was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reconciled here, and then we tried to get back together. And then we had another stumbling block. And I just chalked it up to, oh, you know, it's like being in a married couple. You go to therapy, you work it out or whatever. And then we had another bump, and this is like 10-year spans or whatever. And then finally the last one happened when I turned 50. And then I saw something very clearly where it was like, you know, when in the movies where the line, the vignette just shines on you and everything goes dark. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know her at all. She's different. Or yeah. Maybe because I'm different, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And so then I had to release it.
Yeah, that's been one of the hardest things for me in this chapter of my life, I must say, from leaving Atlanta, coming to LA this time, and relationships dissolving.
Yeah. And nobody talks about that.
Yeah. And because I'm deep, for those of you who don't know, I'm deep into personal development. I mean, people say, how you really looking now? Well, I changed my mindset. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's really it. I've always been a great actress. I'm sure you are too, but so because I do my work, I know everybody doesn't do their work, or people are doing their work and it's different ways. But I remember before I moved here, there were people who lived here, was like, oh, yeah, when you get here, give me a call, you know, oh, yeah, come see me, right? And maybe when I visited and had lunch with people here and there, but when I moved here, mm-hmm. some of those people vanished.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed also is the distance, the more visible I've become
mm.
through my work, through coaching. Like, you know me, Tawana. Like, I'm not dimming.
Yes.
I'm over here with this.
First of all, Sagittarius is not dimming for anybody. I have many Sagittarius in my life. I don't know any of them to even own a dimmer.
What sign are you?
Facts. I'm a Gemini. I'm right opposite.
Oh, okay.
You're very much the same. Yes.
Yes. So, but I would find myself texting people, happy birthday, girl, every year. Happy birthday. Yeah. Or I'm the one reaching out. No, you want to meet for lunch? You want to meet for, look, I'm from New York. I don't do this. Yeah, let's go on a hike.
No.
Yeah. No, I don't do fake appointments. No. Like, no. Are we going to meet or not?
Yeah.
I can take a no.
Yeah, it's fine.
And I had to realize, do an assessment. I was like, these people don't want you in their lives anymore.
Yeah.
They did. You would not be chasing, and I don't chase, I attract.
Yeah.
So that was hard though. And I had to admit, God, that hurts my feelings.
Of course.
But then I had to understand, like, everyone is doing what they need to do for themselves.
That's right. And it's not personal sometimes, but for the most part, because they're in whatever they're in,
right?
Maybe feeling inadequate, whatever the process.
I don't know.
You don't know, it's not your business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're watching and have experienced that, you know, what I've learned, I know y'all didn't ask my advice, but you gotta give people, people are showing you.
They are showing you.
So. Yeah,
for 40 years, it's been there. It's like a sixth sense where you just start to see the dead person was there through all the vignettes. Oh, and when you have other friends be like, hey, watch your back.
Mm.
No, not that person. No. But yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to release relationships, especially I think for women, because we are, you know, socialized the way we are. Be a good friend, always be there, always be strong. You know, all the programming that we receive. And there really is no conversation around releasing friends. There's therapy for couples, but there's no therapy for friendships, you know? So maybe that's a book you need to read.
I got some stories and I've just had to learn. I had to, you know, I actually have turned to like thinking about when I've heard Oprah speak at certain times, and she'll say like, just like how everybody's not on can't go on the full journey with you. You know, some people get off.
That's hard.
Some people get off the train, you know, and be like, okay, well, thank God for the time we had and for what we brought to each other's lives.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's that reason, season, or lifetime.
Exactly.
So when you think back to your work, what job was it? And I know you've done so much, but what job did you book that made you say, after you got done, I'm really good at this?
Oh, that's a good question. Gotta go deep in the thought bank. I was a closeted singer. My mother has this high soprano. She was always singing Chaka Khan songs. Anybody, not Nancy Wilson, but Nellie Cole. She was always singing those songs. So my ear pulled onto that. I didn't know. And there was this one moment where I tried to sing in church. And I was so nervous, my voice cracked. And you know, the church, go on, baby, sing the song. But no, I was like, no, I'm going back in the closet. That was scary. there's been all these moments. And one friend, when I used to dance on MTV on the grind, and we would tape like, I don't know, 20 shows in one day. You know, it was just straight slave labor. And when we would drive from the Bronx to Manhattan, she would always sing. And she was like, you take the high part. And I'd be like, what? And so she would teach me, you do that part. I'm going to take the low or whatever. And then I started realizing, oh, I can harmonize. Oh, I can sing whatever. But I was still very, very timid, very shy. And then, of course, Mariah came out and it's like, Tawana, you can hit that note. And I'd be like, you know, whatever. But if you ask me to sing in front of people, no.
Yeah.
So that friend who was here was in Hair, the musical. And it was a great, great cast and performance. And two of the guys from that performance wrote a musical. Like, I'm not really big on musicals. I like Fame, Rent, the movie, I was just like, oh my God, they're singing again, you know? So me and musicals don't really do well. So
you gotta see Grant. You gotta see Grant in person to meet you.
That's what I think. The movie was too much. When I see like little snippets of the actual Broadway thing, I'm like, ooh. Oh, I like this.
I was one of those people who sat out for the lottery tickets in the front row, fitting on my face. Like, yeah, just yes.
Yeah, let me get all that spit.
You would have been head bobbing in that row with me.
I sure would have.
Yes.
So these two guys who are musical theater people, they wrote a play and they said, hey, do you think Tawana would do a role in this play? And so she was like, hey, you know, Trance and Tim, let me give them a shout out. Trance and Tim asked if I would do a role. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not singing. And she's like, no. There's some talking parts or whatever. I was like, all right, we get to the table read. It's a bunch of us here. And now we got the scripts out and I'm reading my part or whatever. And it says, Leslie sings. I'm Leslie. So I look at my friend, she sit right next to me. So she just puts she knew the whole time.
Set up.
And so I'm dripping sweat and I look over at Trance, and Trance ain't here to play games with people, but he's very supportive. And he said, yeah, Tawana, you're going to sing. You can't be in a musical and you're not going to sing. I have a feeling you can sing. Felicia said you can sing. And I was like, ugh. He's like, don't worry, I'll work with you. So I'm singing in my little head voice. He's like, no, you're going to have to bring it. We're going to meet. So once I started working with him and this big old belt came out that I didn't know, he's like, Tawana, you're not breathing. And I was like, oh, I thought it was bad when you can hear the singers breathing in the song. He's like, well, how are they supposed to get their breath? I was like, I don't know. I just get tired of hearing them breathe. But he taught me placements. Mm-hmm. And then we did this musical. And I mean, they had like 10 part harmony. These dudes, their musicality is wonderful. But when we did that, it was just a stage reading, but that bar of excellence, that's another thing that I'm very attracted to. People who walk in excellence, high bar of excellence. I'm attracted to that. Yeah, because that's how I operate. And now I know that we can both lift this thing together as opposed to the piano falling on me and taking me down the stairs.
Right.
But it was that musical that night when I realized I can actually sing. That's a singing story, but acting, I'd have to really think about what was it? Maybe it'll come to me, but that was the first thing that came to me.
But I love that story too, because it was something that you weren't totally comfortable sharing with the world.
Mm-mm. My mother didn't know.
Or even admitting to yourself.
Yeah.
And then you ended up doing a whole musical.
Yeah. It was, I think it was like one night only. We put in a lot of work.
One night only.
Exactly. It was just because I do like that musical.
Yeah.
The original. Shade, no shade. So
you gonna move on.
And when I joined the choir, so I belong, I'm a first soprano at the Agape International Choir. And I'm just in the choir, so I could be a part of the choir. I'm not interested in solos. People up here vying for solos. I don't want no part of it. I just want to bring joy through mm-hmm. through this unified voice. And Ricky Byers Beckwith, actually, I think it was Marianne Lewis who is the current director. She's like, Tawana, come up here and see if you can sing this song. What? So I'm kind of singing it. All these people, like 200 people in the choir, drenched in sweat. And I'm singing, she's like, yeah, you're going to sing that. So then now we got to rehearse it with Ricky. And Ricky is someone who she has no filter. Her truth is her truth. You better get into it or leave. She would say, make peace with me. Things would be easier for you.
I'm about to borrow that.
Yeah. And so the Sunday that I had to sing that song, something came out of me that I've never heard before. This voice, this high note. And I, you got took over. I was blacked out up there. And when I looked at the video, you see me transcend, my eyes are closed. And then when it's over, I start shaking my hand that had the mic. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, what is that?
Gripping it too hard?
I don't know what it was. And this guy who watched it, he's like, you know, I rewatched it. Why did you shake your hand? And I said, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah. That's the gift. Yeah. That is the gift. I feel like, I know I've seen you sing. I know I've seen you sing probably at a service. It's been a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Been a minute. But I love that you tapped into that. I remember I was in fifth grade. I shared this story with, when I was talking to someone else on this series, And for me, it was fifth grade. I had one line in a play. And that's what I just practiced at home. My mother was like, oh, you can sing? And I was like, yeah.
Do I know?
You don't know. Right. I love that. Let's transition. I have a couple of questions before we wrap.
Okay.
I want to talk a bit about the ebbs and flows of this industry. And as all you all have been watching and listening, you hear this wasn't just Tawana was like, yeah. And then I decided, and then I just was a celebrity, right? Sometimes I think people think that, you know, I coach a lot of people. I know you mentor people, and people can, and I'm never one to say this never, I never say never. Anything
is anomalies. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm the first one to say that, but I also like to just be transparent about the journey for a lot of people. So how have you dealt with, and when we talk ebbs and flows, guys, I'm not just talking about, I'm talking about moments where you're working a lot and then it's slow for a bit. And I'm also talking about when money's tight. And I'm also talking about when you're it's between you and one other person and you're so close to this juicy opportunity and it goes to someone else. Like, how do you balance your mental state, your mental health, and deal with the roller coaster that is our career?
Yeah. All of those things you mentioned is everything that I think any artist, no matter what medium we're working in, experiences. It took me a while to learn this, but the only thing I can do, and this just happened yesterday, is sit in the feelings. That's the only thing I can do. I used to joke, but it's really not a joke, that when people move to LA, they choose one of the polars. One side, there's drugs, alcohol, anesthetizing their emotions. The other one is spirituality, stepping into the feelings, allowing God to use us. And so I went that route. I remember there was one point where I was working 4 part-time jobs that still did not allow me to earn what I'm used to earning, like when I was working in New York. It still wasn't enough for me to live. And I was doing this because actors need to have availability. Mm-hmm. So I'm working, killing myself, working all these jobs, trying to just pay my rent and eat. Meanwhile, the cloud around me had dimmed. It was like, it's like when the sun is shining, but there's that haze. So my overcast, I had this overcast that's not even allowing me to shine. And I remember one of the jobs was, doing inventory for American Greetings, which I would go to like Toys R Us and Rite Aid, and I would stack their whole American Greetings cards. It took a lot of time. I actually liked it because I could be by myself, but the pay wasn't well. And then another job where I was working for Club Monaco and I was doing their overnight store moves, floor moves. And that job would start at 9 o'clock at night and go to 5 a.m. And we would do it 2 nights back to back. And my turnover time just would take me a whole week. So it would take me out of my career pursuit for a whole week. And so there was, I think I did it for about 3 months and I'm on top of a ladder. And when I do stuff, I do it. So I'm folding my sweaters and getting everything aligned and just meticulous. And I'm at the top of the ladder and it's hot and it's probably like 12 a.m. And I'm already getting tired. I'm like, oh my God, we got 4 more hours. And I'm listening to, oh my God, I was listening to some motivational speaker. I can't remember what it was. And then through that, I heard the voice of God say, do you think this is all that I have for you?
Mm.
And I had a sweater in my hand and I looked around. I was like, do you really think that this is what I have for you? I think the job was paying $10 an hour, like really lowballed. Do you really think that this is what I have for you? And I said, no. And I said, okay, so go quit the job. I got down off the ladder, went to the guy, I was like, hey, so this is gonna be my last day. And he's like, no, you're so great. And I'm like, yeah, I know. You could use me, but no, this is my last day.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to that Bergdorf Goodman, I started to learn how to quit jobs very easily. Anthony said that to me. He's like, Tawana, everybody can't quit a job like you. I was like, listen, I'm out. They don't respect me. The pay is not whatever. I'm tired. So there was that. But the main thing that I have to do is I have to sit in the feelings. And there are times I remember, because I'm a heavy believer in astrology and Mercury in retrograde, and because Mercury is my ruling planet, it really affects me. It impacts me. And so I just go very slow. And so there was one year where I just felt bombarded and heavy and nothing was working out. And I said, you know what? Called my agents. I booked out for the full duration of Mercury retrograde. And I sat here and I watched, I don't know, was it like 10 seasons of Project Runway? However many seasons I watched I'd get up in the morning, shower, meditate, eat, whatever, watch Project Runway. And here's what, because God is amazing. Me watching all those episodes, what I learned is the people who come in with a strong vision are usually in the bottom three. Mm-hmm. The people who start to self-doubt themselves, the next challenge, they go home. It's the people who really believe in themselves and also stay in their lane, meaning they know what their vision is. They know their design, what they do. The people who start to be like, oh, well, that one last time, so maybe I'll make a dress like that, they go home. So this was God's way of infusing in me during this time, these principles of know your vision, stay on track. Don't try to see what your friend is doing and like, oh, she's booking a lot. Well, let me start wearing cougar dress, you know, whatever. Let me start wearing that red, whatever the case may be. And then also stay in the course.
Yeah.
So in that short time, so because of that, it is very easy for me to take a break. If it starts to feel like a burden, if I start feeling like I don't know what I'm doing, and I love Oprah says, ask for guidance. What is the next best step? The next right thing I should be doing? And then sit back and then allow those downloads to happen. And I swear to you, if you're open, if you're listening to it, your intuition is stronger than anything I can ever recommend.
But that also requires an awareness.
It requires an awareness.
And an abundant mindset, because the fear that can come up for some actors, what will I miss if? So even though you're feeling all this and it feels like I need a break or I need to step away, there's that, there can easily be that feeling of, but what will I miss? Or will I get dropped? Like all the what ifs that really are just lack mentality. So
yes,
there's another side to that also. Yes,
we do have to, because I used to be that. I used to be on the other side of that. And I had to come to cultivate. I remember when I made the declaration that from here on out, I'm tapping into my intuition and I'm making decisions based on that. Now, there are moments where the whisper is so low. I was like, I don't know what that was. And I still go to, I was like, oh, damn, I just heard the whisper. And so now my new mantra is like, listen to the whispers. You got to listen to the whispers. They always know. That's because God knows that I've cultivated and honed my listening. So he doesn't have to like come through anything. He could just be like, hey, yeah, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I went to pick up 3 plates out of the dish drainer. And as soon as I grabbed them, it was like, nope, just take one. And as soon as I picked it up, all 3 of them fell and broke. Listen to the whispers. Hey, don't do that.
Yeah.
But it takes time. It is cultivation and practice.
Yeah, and it's a trust that's the right voice too. And you're not going to know till you
discernment of knowing
which
voice it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it just takes practice and that's that repetition.
Yeah, repetition. Yeah.
That voice, there's always a voice there. Oh, that's so good. Yeah, sitting in, and that's been you said it very eloquently, but that's been the theme for a lot of the artists I've been talking to in this series about. Everyone has said it different, but at some point you have to sit in it. You have to feel it. Like to pretend that you don't feel disappointed,
it prolongs.
Is not true.
Yeah.
Because we also are in an industry. Right. Because we're in an industry where people say, just brush it off, you know, onto the next, you know, solve it. Right. Nope. And it's like, yeah, but hold on. Like,
right.
And because sometimes you get released or a pen is released or something doesn't pan out, but before you can even fully sit in it, there's another opportunity that's coming through the door. And it's now I'm on this. And so, you know, I talked about this on an older podcast about grieving and not just in the sense of a loved one, but grieving grieving work that we've completed. You know, as actors, we show up on a set or on a Broadway show or whatever, and we have to bond. We must bond immediately, as quick as possible, so that these performances feel real and grounded and we really feel connected and not like strangers. And then it's ripped apart. The job is over and it's done.
Yeah.
And it happens over and over and over. And then the roles that you were called back for, pinned for, about to test for, so close, like there's all this grieving. And for me, acting is very spirituality, the people I step into. And it's like, got to give yourself the space and the time to, and it's okay. And it's okay. Listen,
it's okay.
Everyone may not understand it, especially if you're not in the industry. Mm-hmm. Like, but allowing ourselves, it's just how you said it, just allowing yourself to feel and to honor it. And it doesn't make us weak or whatever. We're still, we're going to dust ourselves off. But can I get a second though?
Yeah. And sometimes it's fleeting. Sometimes it'll move really quickly just by acknowledging it.
Right.
Sometimes it takes a couple of months.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
So let's honor it.
I love that. Yeah. As we wrap, I want you to, you know, kind of, it's a good segue. I want you to hold in your mind's eye for a second. Mm-hmm. The actor, artist at home who's been seasoned, been doing this for a long time, maybe 15 plus years, that they've hit a moment where it's just a lull and it's quiet and they're second guessing everything. And then I want you to think about the brand as what I would call a brand newbie, and someone brand new, have the drive, but they just feel like they keep hitting walls and can't get that first breakthrough. Both of them are thinking, who am I kidding? Maybe I should just throw in the towel. Maybe I'm delusional. What word of advice could you give them?
I'm going through this right now as a veteran actor. And fortunately, the pandemic allowed so many of us to sit down and look at what's working, what's not working, and what are we willing to release. Jokingly, I've quit acting probably 700 times in my lifetime, in my 20 years, but I never quit, right? It's just taking that time away. But what I've learned as of late, especially now that we are in this space of the Issa Rae's, of the Quinta Brunsons, of the Michaela Coles, who are creating their own narrative because the industry wouldn't give them the access in the way they deserved by something that's three-dimensional characters or what have you. I would say find other avenues of creativity that offer immediate rewards. Because acting takes a long time to cultivate, and the rewards, there's more rejection than there are rewards, but when the rewards come, they do help to compensate for a lot of the rejection, but it takes a long time. So what are those other things? We've always been taught, don't have a plan B. I'm not talking about a plan B. I'm talking about creatives. An actor can do many things. And at one point, we used to write the stuff, perform the stuff, market the stuff, go get the venue. We wore all the hats, and somewhere along the line, we were convinced that it was better to have middlemen to take those positions on and get 10% for it. Mm-hmm. So find other avenues of creativity. And so for me, it became improv, learning improv and being able to get on stage and create a story right there on the spot out of a suggestion, bomb, sometimes have a great cohesive story, sometimes have laughter, but I'm having fun. And that was rewarding. Now for me, and they always say this, diversify your portfolio, right? And so we always equate that with finance, but really it's for everything in your life, maybe not dating, or maybe not when you're married, you want to be with one person, but creativity has to diversify. You have to allow yourself. Stuart K. Robinson, who was my first commercial teacher when I moved to LA, he said this in his podcast, I think it's called Hollywood Brass Tacks. He said that his agent or manager, they have to know that he does all these things. He's not going to allow them to put him in the box. He composes music. He coaches people. He does all that. He writes. And he's like, sometimes I only feel like writing and I don't want to do the other stuff. So I need to have a manager, a representation that understands I'm not doing writing right now, or I'm not doing music right now. Mm-hmm. My creativity is coming through writing and you have to allow me that space to do that. And that's, it's also, and I keep bringing this up, divine guidance is always bringing you to the avenues where you're going to reap the most rewards. And sometimes that narrow focus on acting, it's that whole thing when you hold the hose too tight, the water can't flow. Yeah,
right.
So you've got to release that and go focus on something else to let this open up and become more abundant. It always happens. It mm-hmm. always happens. You may not have experienced this, but it always happens. I would just say finding creative outlets that give you faster, immediate rewards so that acting is not so important. And again, when it starts to feel like it's too much, just take a break and do nothing. I promise you, something is being birthed in that time of your stillness. Something is coming through and you have to allow the space for the unfolding to happen. And it hits you and you're just like, oh my gosh. And by taking that narrow focus off of that and coming over here to do something else, then when you come here, you see it differently. Yeah. And then there's other avenues that were right in front of you. It's like when you're looking for something on a counter and you didn't see it and you come back and it's like, that was not there.
Yeah.
It was.
The whole time.
Right.
Right.
No. And you live by yourself. So, you know, go get a new vision. Allow yourself to remove yourself from the thing that's not flourishing right now. Go get a new vision and then revisit it. But allow yourself to be led by whatever you call divine. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's people who don't believe in, you know, and that is their prerogative. But there's something that you believe in. Mm-hmm. And so let that pull you.
Yeah. And, you know, that's beautiful. And I would also add, I think sometimes there's a secret wish that it will, this industry just will stay steady.
Oh yeah, no.
And it's not built
it's
that way.
It's always in transit.
Yeah. It's just not built that way.
No.
And the more, like, just understand that. Yeah. And I think people understand, like, when you, it's not gonna, you may, it may feel this way right now. Yeah. It's like being on a boat, you know?
Yeah.
Well, this that wise head shake. Oh
yeah, I just had this vision of being on the subway platform on the local side, and the train comes. You're expecting it to stop because it's the local side, but no, it's express. It just kept going. Right. What's happening? It got rerouted. It was an express train, but it they just moved it over here. But your train is coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. That's so good. You know, honestly, in when I had some slow moments, that was how my book got written.
Yeah.
It was like, I was like, okay. I said, okay, God, what's this time for? Because clearly it's not for auditioning.
No.
And I've learned over the years to use silence. Cause as you know, I'm busy. I stay busy.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, what is this? And I just went in like, and I kept putting that book off. I kept putting my book off.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, I got time. And I'm committed to waking up early every day. I was like, and then 3 months later, it was done.
And then the joy of completion on a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
That came from you.
Yeah.
That's far more rewarding than somebody saying, here, read these lines.
Yeah. I love how you said, find something that gives you more of an immediate reward. Mm-hmm. That really is resonating with me. And that's really good because, as we all know too, like we hope to get the audition, right? Okay, we get the audition, great. Hope to get the role. Okay, we get the role. I filmed it, great. Hope I don't get cut out. Like it's like it's all the things.
Constant perpetual cycle of mental noise.
Right, right. Yeah. So if we don't find a way to bring the peace for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I even love watching your Instagram. Sometimes you do like these mini movies. And I'm just, it's just like
my little
I love it though.
Thank you.
I mean, I truly enjoy it. It's so creative. And I'm like, mm-hmm. it's like, so when you're saying more of an immediate, like, I know that reward I have when I do a fierce TikTok, like, ooh, that TikTok banging, can't wait.
Yeah, right. Like, you sit there, watch your own thing. Oh, that is good. Girl, that is good. Okay.
But listen, you know, because how many times are we doing amazing work and we never get feedback, we never hear anything else. So feeding our own creativity, because it's just part of us. Like, I think I was talking to Chelsea Crisp yesterday, an actress, and we were talking about, like, just, you can decide to take this, to take a break, which, like, even if you stop, raise kids or do whatever, doesn't mean if you can still be creative no matter what you do.
You do or where you are in the world.
Exactly.
I remember when Crystal was pregnant with her baby and feeling like everything was happening around her. And I'm like, you're a whole mother right now.
Right.
Yeah. And now her career is awesome.
Yes.
It's absolutely. Okay. And if I can just inject this one last thing.
Yes. Sorry, I had to close my email. It was making noise.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes. Please, please, please stop comparing yourself to your friends. Mm. Their success, we have no idea what they've done to get where they are, just like they have no idea what you've done to get where you are. But the main thing is that everybody's like this, right? So comparing is poison for your mindset, because it just makes you think that you're not worthy or all the things that you could tell yourself. Mm-hmm. Celebrate your friends instead. Jim Carrey spoke on a Hollywood Reporter roundtable. Sacha Baron Cohen was at the table. And Jim Carrey made this admission right there. And he said, when Sacha Baron Cohen came on the scene, he said he was terrified, because Jim Carrey has been the only person who does what he does for years. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Sacha Baron Cohen, who does the same thing and well. And Jim Carrey said he had two decisions. He had to either embrace him or he would always resent him, and the resentment would kill his creativity. So he chose to embrace Sasha, and he invited him to come to his house. And so Sasha's just sitting there like, what? Like, you to me are a god, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I just thought that was so phenomenal and profound to recognize you have two decisions to make right then and there, and one will kill your career and the Ooh. Other one will elevate the both of you.
Ooh, I love that. I gotta Ooh. Find that interview.
Yeah.
That's because it is a choice at that point.
It's a choice.
Ooh.
Yes.
Y'all, you see why I got Tawana on here? You see why? Tawana, this has been a gift.
Man,
Thank you so much.
To be here. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing all of these gems. If you miss any part of the Booking Magnet Magic series, do yourself a favor and catch up. All these conversations have just been divine and such.
I can't wait to see them, because I love me some words of wisdom.
Yeah, I need it. So that's like, you know, it's like, I love getting to interview people, because you just learn, and I love hearing people's stories. Mm-hmm. So remember, you have a gift that the world needs to see. So don't rob us and don't rob yourself of sharing that gift. Okay. Mm-hmm. And remember, just like we talked about today, each and every one of us has something that is magical and magnetic about us. So just keep getting to know yourself. Keep getting, I can't, my brain keeps thinking of Tawana in this apartment. I just see you here.
It was cute.
You know? Yeah. You know, but getting to know yourself. And I know that can be scary, because you don't know what's going to come up, but I promise you it'll serve you. So thank you so much, Tawana. I will see you all at the next interview that we do. Thank you so much for watching. Yes. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Hollywood Bound Actor Podcast at HollywoodBoundActor.com.